Hi, I'm Sarah Jessica Parker in for Leonard Lopez today. We turn now to two of the newer faces in dance, Ashley Bowder and Sarah Mearns, both principal dancers with the New York City Ballet. They've already made their mark on countless roles with the company, both in classics like Swan Lake as well as newer works by Christopher Wheeldon. I am very excited they could join me now on the Leonard Lopez Show. Welcome, ladies.
Hi.
Thank you. So your paths just crossed with Gelsey Kirkland, and I think I overheard you both say you'd never met her. Is that true?
Well, I've met her.
You've met her.
I've taken her class when she's guest taught at Steps.
Wow. But had you exchanged, had you had conversations, or was it student-teacher that was the extent of the relationship?
A little bit of conversation and a lot of student-teacher. She picked on me a lot in class because I think she knew who I was and,
yeah,
you know, wanted to interact, and it was really fun.
What we're going to get to you in a second, Sarah. This is Ashley talking, by the way. What did she pick on? What did she pick on, and was it sort of, did you feel honored by it in some way?
I felt really honored. It was a little different because, you know, she started her career at New York City Ballet and then moved to American Ballet Theatre, mm-hmm. so she became very classical from what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she tried to bring a little bit of more of that back to my dancing, mm-hmm. you know, at least in the classroom, letting me be as classical as I wanted and then correcting those sorts of things since we don't really do that. And every once in a while I get to dance a classical ballet, so it's nice to have just that little bit of information tucked away.
Yeah, yeah. And we can talk about the difference between classical and what you do, as you put it. And Sarah, you'd not ever met Gelsey Kirkland.
No, that's kind of like a star-struck moment.
That was far too brief then.
It was. But then it's kind of like, you know, you put those people on a pedestal because you just see videos of them and you see, like, how fast they can move and how amazing they were.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, you just see them in front of you, like, I don't know what to say to you. Hi. Nice to meet you.
Well, I think it's really hard. It's not enough time to have happen maybe what you would like to have happen. So this wasn't fair. You should pretend this never happened. You can start fresh next time.
Totally.
So let's talk about you both now. You're both principal dancers. When did you become principals, and what was the process for you from core to principal? And we could start with Ashley or Sarah.
Well, yeah, for me, it was, I became a principal when I was 21, about a month after my birthday, so it was kind of a late birthday present. I was promoted on Balanchine's 101st birthday.
Wow.
So it's a really good reminder. I've been a principal now for 9 years. And I don't know, I spent about 3.5 years in the corps and less than a year as soloist. But coming in, I sort of knew that Peter Martins, you know, he gave me all these roles to begin with, and he sort of told me, you know, you're going to spend a lot longer in the corps than you will getting to principal. So
interesting.
I knew that as soon as I got promoted to principal, I didn't really do soloist parts anymore anyway. I did a lot of principal roles. So it was sort of natural progression for me to be promoted quickly.
And despite sort of feeling that, or hopefully it was the inevitable, there is that moment, that conversation. I would love to, and Sarah, tell us about, you know, your experience, and then what is that conversation like for that promotion, that matriculation process?
Well, I was promoted in 2008. I got in the company technically in 2004. So I spent 2 years in each, two in the corps, two as soloist, and then principal. And I kind of had that 2 years there where I was like doing corps ballet roles, soloist roles, and principal roles, because they sometimes do that with dancers at New York mm-hmm. City Ballet, just like test you out and see how much you can handle. And, you know, so there was 1 week where I was doing like 13 ballets, but a lot of them were corps, a lot of them soloist, principals. But then it was like at the end of one of those seasons where I was doing all of that. And like they came up to me after, like it was a Saturday or something, and I was doing La Sonnambula, the soloist part. And I was so tired, and I was just like walking away, and he just like, you know, gave me the finger of like, come back. And I was like, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. I thought I was in trouble.
Every time Peter does that, you think you've done something wrong.
Yeah.
Just because he's such a big, intimidating man, but he's usually smiling, but you sort of feel like that naughty kid, like, what did I do?
Yeah. And are you really, from that small walk to 20 feet or 30, whatever the distance is between him motioning over, what is your brain really racing through every possible infraction?
Mine does.
Or creating things that didn't exist?
I didn't take class today. Is he going to yell at me? You know,
I was just so tired. I was just like, okay, what did I do now? But then he came over and he was just like, you know what I'm going to say. And I'm like, no. And he's like, congratulations. And I didn't have to say you're promoted. I was just like, oh, my God. I just, like, started bawling, and my eyes were all black. And I was just like, it was crazy. It's one of those moments that you never forget.
And when you, you know, you're in the company now, you're in some ways the upperclassmen. I mean, not completely. There are obviously dancers there with more time and are chronologically older than you. But you must have a different relationship to the company now, having spent a better part of your life. Mm-hmm. Students yeah. going through the school. It's sort of the farm system of a ballet company.
Totally.
What is your relationship to the company now, and how has it changed from that young person that arrived, you know, with the apprentice contract, and you know, like, what is that for you now?
I think, you know, for me now, students get in as apprentices, and I don't know their names yet. And it's happened more in the past couple of years where, you know, and I get them confused, and, you know, there's so many taken in each year, up to 10. So, you know, I'm like, okay, well, which one is that? Is that right. Mimi, or is that Lane, or, you know, things like that. And there's a separation, but now I feel like when you see them and they get frustrated at things, you know, somebody gets a part over them or they're not having a good class, you know, I feel confident going up and saying, like, it's okay. Like, I've seen this before. Like, it'll work out for you. Don't worry. And telling them this is how it works. And, you know, you've seen so much over the years that when you feel like you can help them a lot, and you wish that somebody maybe had helped you, or mm-hmm. that somebody did and you didn't realize mm-hmm. how helpful it was back then, and maybe you should have listened a little bit more.
Yeah. And for you, Sarah, I know you've talked a little bit lately about having more experiences that you feel your life has opened up, and that, you know, you've allowed more in, and that must change your relationship to the company as well, I would think.
Yeah, well, this year is marks my 10 years being in the company, and that alone kind of scares me. I'm like, wow. Okay, but then I feel like now there's sort of like comfort that sets in your place in the company, and you feel like you can really like settle into the roles that you're doing. You're doing the roles that you've been doing for like 7 or 8 years, and you're like, okay, it's like you find another way of doing them. And then, like she said, you see the core girls doing like Emerald's core for the first time, and I remember doing that. I was like so nervous, you know, and you're just like doing poses on stage, but it's an important thing. And yeah. Now I'm just like, wow. Now you kind of go back to where you were.
I'm Sarah Jessica Parker. I'm sitting in for Leonard Lopate. I'm speaking with Ashley Bowder and Sarah Mearns, principal dancers with New York City Ballet. So speaking of parts and how many you can take on during the course of the season, I think for audiences like myself, we don't really understand the process. So first of all, can you just talk about the amount of time that you're given, when you're informed that you're going to be in a ballet, how much time you have to learn it or to be reminded of it?
Yeah.
You know, who will your partner be, and what is that process like? Because I think we think, oh, you know, you have months, and I know it to be actually now.
I think in some companies, you know, you do have months, but the New York City Ballet is very unique in that aspect. This season alone, since it's the 50th anniversary of New York City Ballet and Lincoln Center, we have over 30 ballets in 6 weeks, starting on April 29th. So, you know, our casting only goes up 2 weeks in advance. Our casting for the first week just went up yesterday evening.
And yesterday evening was the 15th.
Yes. So
holy
we
cow.
Have
barely 2 weeks.
Barely 2 weeks. And there are 11 ballets the first week that go, three separate programs. And I know Sarah and I are on quite a bit of them. So there's one Ratmansky piece, Namuna, that I'm really looking forward to, but I haven't done it.
Ever.
No, I've performed it, but I haven't done it in a while.
Wow.
I don't think it went last season, and I haven't done it since maybe October. And to remember it, I'm like, okay, I think I remember it, but I don't know exactly. And I have rehearsal on Thursday for it for the first time, so I have about a week and a half to prepare. It's opening night.
And how much time will you have to rehearse it? How much time in the studio are you really going to have before audiences come?
Ideally, maybe
hours,
maybe 3 to 5 hours by myself, and then probably one or two hours with everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we're fat. You know what it is, though? I think at New York City Ballet, from such a early age when you get in, you are taught to learn fast and to pick up things really fast and
to
be able to, like, put it on stage, like, in one day.
It's when you get in, it's sink or swim. If you learn it, great.
Yeah.
If you can't learn it, then you'll get faster because that's the way
and
it is.
And is this sink and swim sort of approach, is this the balancing? I mean, that's, you know, people used to say that Peter would quote, Peter Martins would quote the ballet master in chief, correct? Is that what you call it?
Yes.
In chief. He used to quote Balanchine as saying it's basically sink or swim. It sounds, you know, rather terrifying, but maybe for this company, you seem to suggest that that's what works best for you all.
I think so.
I mean, the first season when I got in, it was like, I think we were doing like another anniversary. I think we were doing a centennial or something.
Yes.
And they were doing like twice as many ballets as we do now. So the Corps Ballet, they were just like learning like four ballets in a day and having to learn in 2 hours and then get on that night because there were so many ballets we had to get on stage. But
I think, you know, this coming into being in this school, these, you know, because our company is handpicked from the school, we don't hold auditions. And, you know, I came to SAB, School of American Ballet, because specifically to be a New York City ballet. I didn't want to go to any other company. So you come in, and I was at the ballet every single night they gave us free tickets. And you know, because you see those people, and some of them are your friends because they just got in.
Right.
And you know that they just learned that ballet yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still in line and dancing, and they remember.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about what I call the farm system, because it really is unique. I don't know that this exists at anywhere else in the world anymore.
Yeah.
And we can describe it very quickly, but basically what it is at this point, I think 99% of the New York City Ballet Company is populated by people who came up through the School of American Ballet.
That's right.
That is an unbelievable statistic.
I think it's one of the highest percentages we've ever had in the past, too.
And so that means from an early age, not only are you learning speed and alacrity, but you're also learning a style. Is that true as well?
Oh, totally.
You're learning the Balanchine style.
Oh, yes.
I mean, a lot of us came from the summer course.
Yeah, a lot of us.
We started at like 12 or 13 in the summer course. You had so many like 2 or 3 or 4 summer courses. Then you get into the winter term and you're there for like 1 or 2 years every day. And then you get an apprentice. So it's like from a very young age, you are taught this style, this mental thing. And it just leads you right into what you have to do.
And what is it like to be a professional person at such an early age, and how does one maintain balance and health?
Well, I think for me it was very difficult. I got in when I was 16 and I had no idea what I was doing. I had to stop going to high school because when I got in, you know, I got lead parts right away. It was very overwhelming for me. All of a sudden I had my own apartment and bills to pay and I didn't know what that meant.
And was there anybody sort of counseling you through or shepherding you through this adulthood, this like premature adulthood?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I had one of my mother's friends from childhood who used to be a soloist in the New York City Ballet, Darla Hoover, sort of watching over me. But the schedule is so intense that it's hard. It's easy to pull away from people and just do your own thing. And, you know, I didn't go to school for a while. I had to get my GED and, you know, things like that. And and you're all of a sudden treated like an adult. That was a very strange experience. But now, you know, just because most of us dancers look so young and I have people now treat me like I'm a kid, I'm like, listen, I've been doing this for a long time.
Exactly.
I think we have to be on our own from such a young age. Not on our own, but we're in dorms. We're looking out for each other, and we're not at home living with our parents. So I felt like it was a natural thing for me when I had to get my own apartment. I had a very, very close friend of mine that I actually started ballet with when I was age 3, who was in the company already. So we got an apartment together, and so I felt like I wasn't alone, and I felt like I didn't know how to handle it or what to do because I've been in New York since, you know, 15 years old. So you know the environment. You know, where you shouldn't go and what you shouldn't do. And you're just kind of, you get with a good group of people and you stay with those people. And that becomes your family. That becomes the people you rely on.
Yes.
Because your own family is so far away that, you know, you make your own family here in New York.
We have so little time left. I'm just very quickly from each of you, what are you excited about in the future? If it's this season or when you look at your careers? You each get 30 seconds. Go.
I'm just excited about new works and expanding my dancing in new and different ways and just doing great new projects with lots of things, not just dance, but lots of mediums coming together. And that's kind of where I'm at right now.
I have the same experience. I'm working with two choreographers right now, Josh Beamish and David Fernandez. I mean, I love what I do at New York City Ballet, and it's here for me, and I love every season. But I love all the choreographers that come in, too, and I'm actively seeking to work with more people, too.
Yeah. Fantastic. We're going to get more of you after the break. I'm speaking with dancers Ashley Bowder, Sarah Mearns about their careers and the demands and the rewards of being a principal dancer with the New York City Ballet, and we'll have more with them after the news. I'm Sarah Jessica Parker, and today for Leonard Lopate, I'm speaking with Ashley Bowder and Sarah Mearns, both principal dancers with the New York City Ballet. So I was curious about your relationship to social media and the role it's now playing personally, but also in how you sort of see it in terms of growth of the company and the role it's playing in the company's life.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, now there are so many of us in the company on social media, and we're really being followed. I have the president of the board at School of American Ballet, Bud, said to me, "Oh, I love your Twitter. I listen to your, like, I look for your political updates every day." Because I, you know, it's not just writing about that. And he goes, "But then I like coming to the ballet and knowing that you tweeted about Obama today," and things like that. And, you know, I love it because it gets people interested in you as a person. So it gives you another dimension to your performances, another side that they see, maybe a quality that, you know, doesn't always come through that is interesting about you.
I think a huge thing for me is that, you know, when we were younger, we didn't have Instagram and Twitter and all that.
We didn't have cell phones.
And we didn't have cell phones, right? So we weren't able to, like, see inside of our mentors or the ballerinas that we love. And so I think now all the followers that we have are all these 12 and 13-year-old ballerinas that want to be where we are. And they're able to see our everyday lives or see performance photos or, you know, write us fan letters on Instagram, which I think is so cute. And, you know, and on Twitter, you promote articles that you're in that you think they would really benefit from reading or so anything like that. I think it's, for me, that's the huge thing about it.
And was that, when you were injured, was that also a way to stay connected with the company and the world of dance in some way, or less so that?
Less so that. I did kind of chronicle, like, what you go through in an injury and what, I started a video blog about it. And it's just like it, you know, it helps you. It keeps you inspired and going. But then it also sends a message to the young people that if they're injured, you know, it's not the end of the world. You're going to see the light at the end of the tunnel. It's going to be really bad for a while, but you'll get past it and you'll move on.
And you also both have ideas about social media, growing the company, helping to create the next audience of theater goers, ticket buyers. Can you talk a little bit about that and the benefits you see? It's a newer way of thinking.
Well, I think about, you know, now I go on Twitter and I'm looking, I follow the things that I'm interested in. So I follow, you know, like New York Times art section and things like that. You know, you get all of your news in one convenient list. Mm-hmm. And when you're following somebody who's an artist, it's like kind of like a what to go see. Mm-hmm. Because I, you know, not only tweet about my own performances or those of New York City Ballet, but I tweet about what I think is also interesting for the art lover. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, having all of that in a space where all of your news also is a huge thing, because it's like, okay, what should I do? What should I be thinking about? And you have things like that, and, you know, audiences hopefully come back and remember these things, and, you know, you sort of get butts in the seats that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely, because, I mean, there's a huge range of people on Twitter, you know, but like she says, there's a huge range of things you could read and you can watch and you can post. And then if they see something that they really like or they read something that they, oh, maybe they'll go buy a ticket. Maybe they'll go to a matinee. Maybe they'll go to the exhibit, like the JR exhibit, and they'll see what's going on. And then, oh, maybe we should go and actually see them on stage perform. Or, you know, it's, I think that's good.
And it also allows them to know, you know, well in advance when you're touring, which is this company does beautifully and has had a lot of success in smaller groups. Mm-hmm. The Moves, is it the Moves?
Yeah, the Moves tour. Yeah.
Which is amazing. And then when the larger company tours. You all like touring, don't you? I mean, you like travel, you like these experiences.
I love it. Yeah. I tour a lot on my own, too. I just got back from a five-week trip to Italy.
Dancing.
Wow. So our company, you know, has – I relish our tour time. We've gone to Paris and London and
Japan.
Tokyo. Yeah. And just all of these super fun places. And now with the Moves Tour, you know, it's a convenient small little package. Like, here's the New York City Ballet. Here's what we do.
And it's as small as it – how many dancers is Moves typically?
Oh, I don't know. 12 or – probably 12 to 14.
Yeah, 12
versus
to
100.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I think we're both going to Jackson Hole, Wyoming in August.
Yeah. As part of the moves.
As part of the moves. So, you know, it's good. We get to go domestically, too. And I've never been there personally. And
yeah,
so
me neither.
I'm very excited
to go to
a place.
It's a beautiful venue, and the audiences are very appreciative of what you all will be bringing.
Slightly less oxygen, I think.
Yeah, the
one
elevation.
Must prepare, right?
Yeah. We'll have to rehearse a lot for that one.
And when you're touring, Sarah, are you having time at all to see other things, to eat different, wonderful, exciting food, or are you pretty much sleeping and going backstage and sleeping and going back? Can you carve time out, or is that a ridiculous thought?
Recently, I have to say that on the recent tours, I've had all the shows. So it's kind of like this last, the Kennedy Center. We just had I had every show, and like two of the things that we did were the two of the hardest things in my rep. So it's like your brain kind of goes into like, okay, what do I need to do to stay healthy? Because we're away from New York, you have to think about, okay, you don't have the regular people you can go and see to like reboot. And so you kind of like, okay, maybe I should just go back to the hotel, put my legs up, and then eat, and then get up in the morning. So it's kind of like you do have to stay mentally like focused, but it's like you're in such a beautiful place. Like my favorite place recently was Denmark. Oh my God, our hotel was on the river. The theater was on the river. We took a boat ride to the theater. I was like, this is crazy.
Right, right.
It was amazing, and the food there is amazing.
But sometimes, you know, you do make that sacrifice. You know, you have all these performances, and you're like, well, I could go to this great restaurant and have this great experience, or I could go to bed.
Right.
Yeah. What do I have to do tomorrow? Well, I have a hard day tomorrow, but I really want to go do this because I
don't
know
the next time. More often, do you err on the side of sleep, or do you err on the side of the good meal?
I usually err on the side of the good meal, but, you know,
you lack discipline.
But then you'll always find me taking a nap in my dressing room the next day.
Excellent. So it's strategic. I'm Sarah Jessica Parker. I'm sitting in for Leonard Lopate. I'm speaking with Ashley Bowder, Sarah Mearns, principal dancers with the New York City Ballet. Speaking of putting your feet up, are there body parts the next morning following a ballet that tell you what ballet you danced the night before? Can you say, ooh, my elbow is really aching. Ah, yes, I must have danced.
Totally.
I don't know what last night. Is that strange and odd? And do you talk about that? Did you ever realize that that's a way of sort of documenting your career in some way?
You know, it's like it was never a conscious thing for me. But now that you've said it, it's, you know, I'll wake up and go, oh my gosh, my right hip is so tight. Well, I did second act Swan Lake yesterday, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, ooh, my left ankle is jammed. I did 32 fuertes yesterday. You know,
For me, it's like my hamstrings, because I have to do a lot of planches in my rep. So it's like if I do like
second. Can you describe what a planche is?
I'm sorry.
That's okay. And we'll get to fuertes in a minute.
A little missy.
You mean everyone doesn't know what those are?
It's like, okay, if it's like, it's like a split, but not on the floor, and you're on point, and your leg is in the air towards the ceiling.
And you almost are making a vertical line with your body.
Yes.
We call it 6 o'clock.
Yes.
6 o'clock.
Six o'clock. That's
perfect.
Right. So my hamstring, obviously, when you do that too many times, the standing one, it gets, like, really tight. And the next morning, you can't really walk because it's just, like, it's been so strained and stretched out and pulled out and back in.
That's when you roll out of bed onto the heating pad and the foam roller.
Oh, my gosh.
Which happens quite
often.
And
those things are always right near the bed? Is that...
I personally have a huge basket that is... There's two yoga mats in there. There's a million different size balls to roll on, a foam roller, a thing called a refresh roller that's electric that you can put your feet on or put on various parts of your body that kind of goes round and round and massages you. I've literally got every therapy tool you could ever want beside my couch.
I wish, my dream when I have a house is to have my own room that's just a therapy room all that stuff in it. It's kind of amazing.
With a Pilates machine and gyro machines.
So, and you're both very deserving. I hope that's somewhere in your near future. What about pre-show rituals, superstitions? Do you and do you not want to talk about a superstition? Is it superstition? Are you superstitious about talking about superstitions? And do they exist? I know they do in the theater.
Yeah, that's I know there's a lot of people who, you know, knock on the floor or cross themselves, or they have to put. I used to have to put my right shoe on before my left, but now, you know, as I get older, I kind of don't want those habits. I don't want those things because what if I can't do something one day? You know, and. I'm actually consciously doing everything different every day, you know. But there are certain things you do. Like, I always put my right eyelash on before my left, and I feel really weird if I don't.
Because you can be certain that your eye will be there no matter what.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's some things that I feel very strange. Like, if I do my hair before my makeup, some people do it the opposite way. I can't.
Yeah, I have to do my makeup before my hair.
I feel so strange.
Who teaches you how to do makeup? And I noticed that, for instance, you both have different styles of doing makeup, but somebody must teach you that hand because that is beautiful. It's very old-fashioned.
We had a wonderful man named Michael Avedon.
Yeah, we were taught by the same
company.
Person.
And he was truly an artist and in every sense of the word. And if you want him to do your makeup, you would sit in the chair for like an hour and a half, and he would make your face look like a painting. It was like the most gorgeous thing. So I got to this point where I would just do my makeup in the makeup room with him. Unfortunately, he's not there anymore, but I still do what he told me to do. And he said that everybody's face is different.
Yes.
You can't copy what anybody else is doing because, you know, Ashley's eyes are bigger than mine. So I can't do my eyeshadow like she would do her eyeshadow or eyelashes or anything like that because it's like everybody's face is different, how the light hits it. And he would teach you that. He would go out to
And
the
what
front.
About color of mouth? Do you do that per ballet? Is that what you think looks best on you
I
across the
board?
I change
per ballet. There's certain things like Swan Lake because it's blue lighting that you can't wear red because it looks black. So you have to wear pink. Mm-hmm. But most of the time you have free rein. I usually kind of match my eyeshadow and my lip color to the costume. But fortunately, in the dressing room, I can sit with my big mirror in front of me. And right behind me is the rack with my costume. So it's literally directly behind my head. So I sort of do what is ever hanging behind me.
Yeah.
And do you watch footage of yourselves dancing?
Absolutely not.
You don't.
I can't.
You know
you
what?
It's not helpful
at
all.
I'm in the sorriest thing ever.
I'm in the same boat now, too. I used to watch everything, and I realized at a certain point I was driving myself crazy. I was getting so anal about this foot not being exactly pointed the way I wanted to, and this angle and all these things. And I got to a point where I wasn't enjoying myself as much, and I just went cold turkey, gave it up, didn't watch anymore.
It's like you
and
see
now
the
you're
worst
liberated
of
from those ideas of
now,
yourself.
Now just, I feel freer to be an artist. You know, my technique will be there, hopefully.
And speaking of footage, are you both, and is this sort of standard operating procedure to watch archival footage to learn parts of other dancers, not yourselves? Is that still used?
Definitely.
Learning ballets?
I mean, I think that's one of the things you have to have when you walk into a studio when you're learning something new. They always have either like a really, really old tape, and then they have like a previous one, so you could like compare to see which version you like or which version they prefer teaching you, or a mix of the two. And it's also good for you to like visualize what the stage looks like, you know, what it sounds like. Orchestra or piano on stage. So that's definitely a vital part.
I like the video to see what it looks like. And right now I'm rehearsing Raimonda Variations. And the ballet mistress, Sally Leland, brought in a tape of Kira Nichols and Sean Lavery, who have both been retired for quite some time now. And they look very young in it. So it's nice to kind of see. I think it might have been from when Balanchine was still alive. So it's seeing the version that Balanchine had set on them and watching that. And then, you know, John Stafford's also a ballet master. And he said, well, last time, Ashley, this is what you did. But on this tape, they're doing this. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to do that version because that's closer. You know, you see things like that and they're like, well, this is what you did and this is what they did. And I like to see that. And I like to say, well, you know, maybe I'll like the way I did it. Or, you know, maybe I'll go back to this version.
So we have no time, but because you're New York City ballet dancers and you were taught to act quickly, I'm going to ask you one crazy last question, and there's this is an odd way to end this, but do you think Balanchine would have picked you as dancers? What do you feel about
loaded.
Oh, God. I would hope so. Yeah. I would dream and hope so that
those are my
would.
Thoughts. Yeah. I hope so. I really enjoy his repertoire, and I think both Sarah and I dance a great many of his ballets. Yeah. part of our major rep. You know, yeah. we are balancing dancers, so I certainly hope that he would enjoy the way we
and
portray
I hope,
them.
And I hope he's watching right now.
I can't imagine that he would not have chosen both of you. You're extraordinary and bring so much to the company, and we're so grateful that
Thank you.
Thanks. I've been speaking with Ashley Bowder and Sarah Murns about their careers in dance and the demands and rewards of being extraordinary and principal dancers of the New York City Ballet. Ashley, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sarah Jessica.